welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested. Hello, this is the Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese host, Quan Wen. This is another one of my own monologue episodes, but in this monologue specifically, I do not intend to cover a wide range of topics like the first one. I just want to address one topic, that is when comedy got lost in translation. This is a summary based on my personal experiences, and now that I've done some field research in quotation marks, I feel happy to share my findings. First, I want to say when I say lost in translation, I have a specific... There are conditions to be met. So first, I'm talking about when you're doing comedy and there are two languages involved, and these two languages will have to be at different fluency levels. Your jokes are predominantly devised or created or written in language A, and language A is the more fluent language. Then you're going to perform in language B, which is the less fluent one. The material is going to use to perform in language B is based on translating whatever you already created under language A. One of the principle or the wisdom is that, well, jokes are just jokes, but I'm of the idea that if you are a certain language speaker, that language already sort of mold or formulate how you think. Some of your jokes may be universal, but some of them will be quite conditioned or already molded by a certain language. And then when you try to translate those funny jokes into another language, the meaning either get lost, you don't make people laugh, or the effect of those jokes are discounted. And that's what I'm trying to prove today. I'm just going to put a little caveat or upfront to explain that why am I doing another monologue episode? Because normally, and when I started this podcast, the idea was to interview other comedians and to get the wisdom and to understand the experience from other comedians. It turns out whenever I do a monologue episode, they're kind of popular. They're not like the top charting one in my own episode ranking, but typically they do quite well. So I thought, okay, some people do want to hear this and blah, 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 blah on. And secondly, whenever I talk to different comedians, I react to them. So I have my own thoughts, but they are kind of like scattered around different episodes. I'd like to find a chance to summarize thoughts on similar topics. So it's more a systematic summary for you to revisit the points I go over again, again, and in different interviews. Also, I realized that the last two monologues were done at the end of a quarter. So I thought this is the way to go because I find it difficult to, there's not an indefinite pool of candidate that can fit the profile of comedian I like to have on this podcast. I need to find a way to make sure I can still continue the podcast in whatever capacity. And I think one of the solution is to do occasional monologue episodes. So this is my idea. I'm going to do it quarterly, and every quarter I will summarize where the listeners come from, what are the top 10 cities and countries in which this podcast is consumed. And it's not your cup of tea, you can just ignore it because I'll put it at the end of each monologue episode. If you quite like it, then stay tuned until the end. Finally, a little plug, a little self-promotion. I don't do too much of those, but I thought, you know what? I've been doing this podcast for 3 years. I can allow my little plug. I'm going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year. I'm bringing a new show called Andrew's Art. The worst. It's a silly title. I'm going to trash my ex-boyfriend's reputation. And that's it. That's all you need to know. If you're coming to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, this occurs, come find me. I'm at 4:30 every day, except the 12th, in a big yurt. How fringe is that? Okay, let's start my finding today. So if we go back to the very idea of translation, I think the first one I really talk about it with my guest would be in season 1 episode 17 with the Welsh comedian Stefan Alin. Alin is a Welsh pronunciation. You'll see his name spelled as A-L-U-N. Stefan's mother tongue is Welsh, but he grew up in the United Kingdom, so he had to keep fluent in English, and most of the gigs he goes to outside Wales will also be in English, so he's very competent in English. In that episode, he mentioned that you can be fluent in two languages, but to be able to translate language A to B and from B back to A is another skill. It's a separate skill. So even if you're fluent in two languages, you are not necessarily good at translating things between the two. Now, I quite often check with my guest which language they perform in, because if you notice, most of my guests are based in the United Kingdom and most of my guests are not native English speakers. That's like the motto of this podcast. Quite often they perform in English, and it is even the case that many of them are used to thinking and performing or writing creatively in English. So even though technically they are more fluent in their respective mother tongue, they are not able, or they are less used to performing in their mother tongue, and English become their comedy language. So quite often I will ask them, do you also perform in your own language? Do you also perform to your own people? And this really varies. I mean, with some minor exceptions, I would say Tati McLeod has been the true bilingual guest, and Sergio Polo has always taken care of performing in Spanish, even in his native Catalan, to cater to different markets. Tiziano Labella has gone back to Italy. I think that if your mother tongue is a substantial, in this case, a European country, and there are enough, I'm talking about like millions and millions, it's a much bigger population. So where the native speaker is, say, German, Spanish, even Portuguese, French, Italian, there's a chance. If it's a much smaller country, then typically people will stick to performing in English. But it can also be not determined by the size of the population that speak the language. So my previous guest, Blank, for example, used to be a Mandarin comedy performer, and she now really concentrates on performing in English for political reason. And that's the same reason there's a lot of Mandarin speakers in London, but rarely do I try to perform in Mandarin. Why? Because I'm Taiwanese, and most of the Mandarin speakers who will go to comedy shows are from mainland China. So there's a lot of conflicting ideas on politics, and they wouldn't be able to enjoy my sense of humor when I make fun of China, for example. So I think it's not really worthwhile to invest my time and energy in. So that's the very basic starting point about different languages when it comes to translation. But I'm going to get closer to the topic today. Now, we were talking about the conversion between someone's mother tongue and typically another language being English. But what I'm trying to say today is a bit different. It derives from my experience of performing in French and in Italian. So let me explain why this episode was delayed, because I actually already recorded one episode about more than a week ago, and it was done in a rush, and I listened back to it. It was really bad. It was rubbish. I like no editing can save that piece of crap. So I decided to bin it and I come back to re-record this one. And this time I did proper like writing down in sequence, not just bullet point, but specific examples I'm going to reference. And also I thought I got the invitation to perform at the Italian comedy night. So I thought, okay, so other than French, I have another example. So I will have two languages to compare. And this is the basis. This is like the sample for you today. What I want to check is it possible for someone to perform in a language that you're not fully fluent in? And this language will not be English, because in a globalized age, quite often people are competent in speaking English to a degree. But I'm talking about a language that you may have learned before, or you learn as a hobby, but you don't use it all the time. So this typically a third or like a second foreign language. Can you perform in it? Is it possible when you are not at the very fluent, similar to native speaker level? My conclusion tentatively is that yes, it is possible, but you may have to rely mostly on the technique of translation, and the translation gonna cost you a little bit, because the same joke would not work quite as well, or in some cases it may not work at all. And this is what I want to discuss today.
Veuillez patienter, faire un petit expériment avec moi parce que mon pensée est comme le gouvernement Macron, il a fonctionné avant, mais...
Ça fonctionné.
OK, case in question, I perform in French, in Italian. And here I want to explain the relationship of these languages to me so that it makes more sense to you guys. I want you to know I'm not really here to just to brag. Is there part of me feeling proud that, oh, I speak more than one foreign language? Absolutely. But I would describe my relationship with language like an absentee father, you know, like a womanizer. I have a litter of children, but every single one of them is with a different mother. So I'm a hobbyist, I'm a language enthusiast, but I tend to chicken out halfway through. I chill out very quickly. So I would start learning a language. It's all new, it's exciting. And midway through, when it got really difficult, I said, nah, it's not worth it. And I just bin it. So it ended with lots of, I was like a space junks. Like the disused satellites surrounding the globe. French was my second foreign language. English was my first foreign language, obviously. And it was a language I had such a romantic size ideas of. Then I did 1 year of exchange student and I absolutely hated Paris. But I did live there for 1 year. I had two French ex-boyfriends and they were both quite bad in English, and I had to speak French with both of my ex-boyfriend. That's why I always maintain a certain level of fluency in French, even though I don't use it every day. So that's my relationship with French. I think my French level right now will be somewhere in B2. If you're familiar with the European framework, B2 is what they typically require. It is sort of intermediate high level and what they require of an immigrant of certain jobs, sometimes university entry. But if they want a language to be really, really good, that would be the C1 level. And if you're like a quasi native speaker, that you'll be C2. But most time, I think for immigration, they take it at B1. And if they want you to be in certain jobs, you need to fit B2. And if you want to be in university, either B2 or C1. I hope that makes sense to you. My Italian, by comparison, is very rudimentary because I only started learning Italian really as a hobby about 2-3 years ago, I think. I just feel since I started doing comedy full time, everything I do, every time I wake up, all my life is about comedies. I needed something as a bit of change. So I decided to just take an Italian lesson with no fixed agenda. I didn't say to myself by what year I needed to do what. So I do it at the slowest pace possible. I just think it sounds quite melodic and quite beautiful and it's fun. And I do like to travel in Italy. After 3 years, my Italian is roughly at A2. I think it's somewhere a secondary school student. Like I can go to a restaurant and bakery and order something. I can start a little chit chat with someone speaking Italian, but the conversation will be very shallow. I cannot have an in-depth conversation, and I hope that makes sense to you. Now, how did I end up performing in French? Very briefly, if you remember, there was an episode I interviewed the French comedy show in London. It's called French It Up. I interviewed the organizer, Jean-François. Jean-François is his real name. He's supposed to be Jeff Bidab. Now, the day I contacted him, because, you know, I kind of remember the language. I just typed some French phrases here and there. And he was like, do you speak French by any chance? And I said, yeah, I do. He didn't say someone happened to cancel. They are short of performance, whether I was happy to join them. I say, well, I'm not really confident in my French language ability. He say, just do a painting one, mix some English, they'll be fine. So I went and I actually tried to prepare as much as possible. And I did end up doing the whole set, 5 minutes entirely in French. But that was quite a weird experience. I think I mentioned it in the previous monologue. So my finding is kind of based on this. Now, because I never perform in French, and I rarely use French for the last few years, so I never tried to write any joke in French. And I was asked just hours before the show, how could I prepare? So the only logical solution is, well, I've been performing in English for about 9-10 years. I have tons of jokes in English. I'm going to select some of the jokes and just translate them into French and see if that works. And that's why we're talking about this monologue episode today. What was my finding? I thought when I started to select what jokes that can translate, I instantly realized that some jokes are it's absolutely impossible to translate to make it work in French. And that type of joke typically are puns. Puns, you rely on the accidental confusion you create in that language. I'll give an example. This is not my joke. This is an internet joke, but I heard someone doing before. So the scenario involves a father with a teenage daughter. And the father was dashing out, realizing he forgot his watch. So he went back to the bedroom because he thought the watch is on the bed. Then he saw his daughter making out with her boyfriend. And then he said to those two young lovers, "Say, hey, not on my watch." This joke only worked because there is a pun. There's a double meaning to the expression "on my watch." It can be physically on that watch, or it's not under my supervision or not under my roof in that sense. As far as I know, I tried to Google and Google did give me the translation "pas sur ma montre," but I just don't think it's the same thing. So I tried to give them the full sentence with the context. And I think Google gave me a translation. It's something like "pas sous ma supervision" or something. So it doesn't work like that because "not on my watch" is a very English expression. And the same expression in French is not translated word by word, not translated literally. So this kind of joke, it cannot work when you try to translate between two languages. The same routine sticks with language A. And to a wider degree, I would say not specifically puns. Sometimes some jokes rely on the characteristics of a language. This joke, I rarely say it, but let me use it to make the case. So I read a news article that a racist killer is at large in London. And then I paused and I asked an audience, but I don't know whether I should be worried as a minority person, because does this killer kill people like me? And I would say someone famous like, I don't know, Diaba or Stormzy. Also, does this killer kill racist people? So I would give an example of famous racist people like Nigel Farage. It's not a super ha-ha funny joke, but if there's anything remotely funny about this, it's because in the English language, sometimes the same spelling, same word can be used for different functions. So in this case, a racist can be a noun and a racist can also be an adjective. So when you say a racist killer, you don't know whether it's a killer that is racist themselves or it's a killer that killed racists. Does that make sense to you? But the same joke wouldn't work in French because French, the sentence structure, you have to be more specific. When you say the racist killer has the racist quality, you would say un tueur raciste. But when you say a racist killer that killed racists, it would be somewhere like un tueur qui tue les racistes. I think so. So you can't just say, when you say un tueur raciste, it's very clear that racist is an adjective. Actually, in the end, when I told the joke, the funniest part is not about the confusion. The funniest part is British people never learn grammar, so a lot of them do not know what adjective means. Adjective is a describing word. So that ended up in the original punchline of the joke, but it doesn't apply in this case. In this case, the confusion in an English language when you say a racist killer wouldn't arise when you try to say in French, because the French language already dictate you to be specific. It's a killer that is racist, or is the killer that kill racists. You have to be that specific. And I think another example is that, okay, so maybe it's not on the linguistic feature of the language, but it's the culture and then your references point that's very linked to that language. For example, a lot of British comedian likes to talk about getting absolutely drunk. They are so drunk that they would act in an embarrassing way. They will vomit. They'll walk around with their knickers in their hands and they call themselves a legend. This kind of celebration of being absolutely pissed, being absolutely drunk, and act supposedly shamefully in public is something people think as cool, as funny, as down to earth. But I don't think continental Europeans share exactly the same feeling. And actually get yourself that level of drunk, it's not really considered a social norm, I'm guessing, in France. Correct me if you're a French speaker or you live in continental France, but I think that when an English comedian say, "Oh, I got so drunk, I realized I wake up lying on the street with no socks or underwear on," and then the audience in the UK would laugh. And I think that in some continental European country, people would think, do you not feel ashamed of it? Because the sense of humor on this specific sort of social norm is different. I definitely remember when I first came from Taiwan to the UK, went to a comedy show, and I heard comedians talking about coming from a shithole, a hometown. And that's a very, very usual comedy trope in the United Kingdom. My first reaction, I remember at that time, was, if your hometown is shit, why would you want to talk about it? Isn't that embarrassing? So it's a complete different mindset. if you try to translate the joke verbatim, okay, it's not tied to the language, but it's a different society and different culture. It has slightly different sense of humor, and it might not just work. So that was my preliminary finding. Now, once I decided what routines would not have this sort of problem, and I decided to translate into French, then further questions arose. You know, it's about the execution, the details of those translations. I really started to feel the restriction from the language itself. I'll give you one example. I had a joke about the misery of train passengers because there are so many strikes. I would misdirect the audience, seemingly talking about my grandmother. I say my grandmother gave birth to 9 children in her lifetime. And the punchline is a very crude line saying that I think my grandma's pussy worked harder than any train driver in this country. Obviously, that's an exaggeration because she gave birth nighttime. There's no train driver that only work night times in a year. But it sort of contrasts how often people have strikes here and the unlikely association of an old Asian woman's pussy giving birth to a train driver doing what is funny per se. So that's why the joke almost always worked. Now, when I tried to write the joke in French, I thought about, will they understand? Yes, they are French speakers and the French railway system is different, but these are London inhabitants. They would suffer the same kind of misery I suffer as a London commuter. They would get it. Cool. Okay, so how do I translate the joke? And instantly, I start to wonder, how the hell do you say a driver in French? This is a problem. I haven't lived in France for more than 10 years, and I'll use it on a day-to-day basis. Most of the time when I talk in French, it's about croissant or I like a coffee. I rarely mention train drivers in French. I don't read French newspaper all the time. How do I translate a driver? And my first reaction was a chauffeur like taxi driver, chauffeur. Okay, maybe that's a word. That's the first word that came to my mind, but it just doesn't feel right. So I Google Translate and I check the right word should be un conduiteur because to drive a car, the French verb is conduire. Je conduis une voiture. But it's slightly misleading because conducteur sounds a bit more like conductor, isn't it? And I don't remember what's the French word for conductor. See, if I didn't check in advance, I would have used the wrong word. Maybe people will understand, but they would definitely find it weird. And that sort of weird use of word would take people away from the moment they're supposed to be tricked by my joke. So I think in the first lesson, I realized that if it's a language you're not that familiar with, that initial preparation going to take longer and it's going to take more labor. You have to be very sure, especially the key words in your setup and your punchline. For example, I didn't even know how to say a French pussy. And I check on internet again. And this time I was so not sure I had to go there and ask another French performer. Is that what you mean? I think it's called chat. It's the same word for like a pussycat pussy and also used as a pussy. And the only other word for the female genital area is I think I learned it from Emily in Paris. And Emily Paris had this funny joke about the female vagina is masculine rather than feminine. And that's outrageous. So if you try to translate your joke, then you have to do so much extra preparation work to make sure you're using absolutely the right word. And secondly, I remember the day when you don't have the advanced sort of AI or technology or Google Translate. It's more hit and miss when you're trying to look for a word in the dictionary and it's not necessarily right, but not even Google Translate is always right. When it comes to the key punchline, you have to nail the word. And I have another joke. This is about my appearance and a joke about I'm a homosexual, I'm a gay, but I look like a very specific kind of lesbian. And the wording I use is a lesbian who would take part in a research into fertility goddess worshipping. Now, I tried to translate this joke into French. Okay, I'm gay, I can do that. Je suis pété, je l'ai de lesbienne. Lesbian is easy. But when I tried to translate fertility goddess worshipping, that was difficult. When I just typed down fertility, and I typed down fertility goddess, and then I typed down fertility goddess worshipping, I keep seeing Google Translate changing the word they use. First, the word fertility, Google Translate offer me two different versions at different point. One is a similar word to English, fertilité, but the other word is fécondité. And I don't remember why, but I remember when I was studying in France, I think fécondité was the word I came across more often. I cannot explain it. I don't have the fluency level to justify the feeling, but I had a vague idea. I don't think fertilité is the better translation. I had to ask other French performers, they agreed with me. The other problem is originally when I say fertility goddess worshipping, there's something about the image that's really funny, but also about the phonetics. If you remember my guest from season 2, episode 9, Mickey Overvan, Mickey is such a great joke writer, and she talked about the sound, like some words sound funny, and you also have the rhythm, and some words are short, some words are long, so you want the whole sentence to sound, you're invited to perceive that it's a funny rhythm, there's a funny sound to it, and I think worship, God is worshiping, that idea is funny, but I also think it sounds quite funny. But when I look at the translation that Google Translate offered me, worshipping, they translate it as la culte, as a cult. And I think the culte, it doesn't strike me phonetically as funny as worship. I have another example. In another joke, I would say, look at my fat tummy. Obviously, I am not an illegal immigrant. I couldn't have swum to the UK, could I? So in that sentence, I didn't swim to the UK. Swim in French is nager. But then I realized when I tried to translate that into French, I don't think they use swim in the same sense as a movement. Sorry. My actual sentence was, I didn't swim here. Yes. Now, if you think about the sentence, I didn't swim here, in English, you have two possible explanations. One is that in a fixed surrounding, and you're just swimming in a swimming pool, for example, you didn't swim here, you didn't swim in that area. But I also meant it as a movement. So I didn't swim here means that I didn't come here by swimming, right? So I use swim as similar to I didn't walk here, I didn't run here, I didn't fly to get here. Now, when I translate that into French, if you're a French speaker and what I'm saying is wrong, please correct me, please send something in. When I type down, I didn't swim here, the instant Google Translate gave me was like je vais nager ici, and I thought that's not quite right. I mean, it's right, but it's not the sense I meant. And then I realized to properly convey the sense of movement, I have to translate the sentence into I didn't come here by swimming. Je ne suis pas venu ici par nager. Now, two questions arose. This is very significant because in the French language, when you try to use past tense, they have two different type of, because you have to combine the original. If I don't use the grammatical term, it's difficult. So you have the participe. So you have the original verb have to be changed in a certain shape, but you have to add another word. And the other word either is or is have. You either say, for example, I didn't swim here, j'ai pas nagé ici, but you say, I didn't come here, je ne suis pas venu ici. So it's even different word they have to combine with. So the French is already more rigid, like, I didn't swim here. It's a very quick and short expression, but je suis pas venu ici par nager, it sounds a bit sort of laborious. It doesn't sound quite as snappy. And secondly, I didn't swim here. Swim here is very short and is a strong, I think it's a very strong sounding word, but I didn't know that, when I say I didn't come here by swimming, do I say je ne suis pas venu ici par nager, or should I say la natation? Because I don't know whether nager or la natation, whether either of them sounds funnier to the French speaker's ear. And I also don't know like whether je ne suis pas venu ici par la natation makes sense. I'm pretty sure par nager is right, by swimming, but la natation, by the swim, I don't know whether that's right, then that makes me having to ask another native French speaker. So, which means that if I'm preparing for an English show, I just have to quickly think over what routine was that I'm trying to do. Even if it's a new joke, I just need to vaguely remember the wording. I'd need to know it sort of word by word. But in the French case, if I'm preparing for a French performance, because I'm not that familiar with the French language anymore, to prepare for it, I have to check the key words in the setup and punchline when it comes to a joke. I have double checked so many times, either on the internet, either with AI, either talk to someone who's a native speaker. And the other restriction is that I'm less able to riff. So I cannot improvise quite as much. And this is something I love to do. So it makes sense because I'm always telling the same joke. If I find different member of audience, I can make fun of them. At least change my routine slightly differently from time to time, from show to show. But I realized that day, because I was performing French, and I saw this young girl who had a big bun on her head. It just looks like a bin bag, like a trash bag, or like a garbage bag you have a knot. But I don't know how to say a bun. And I was just about to get on stage, and that venue had really poor internet connection. I couldn't find out how you say a bun on your head. So I just have to let go, and I couldn't riff. And it definitely feel like I was not amputated, but it was definitely a lot more restriction placed on me. I have to say though, despite all the restrictions, there were also interesting learning experience, because I realized that, oh, I was writing some jokes specific to the French language with the French audience in mind, because I started to think in French when I was, maybe at least partially, I was trying to make it sounding a bit more French. And then I thought, I have to excuse and apologize for my lack of French fluency. How do I say it? And the idea came up, and I compare my French fluency to the French president, Macron's government. And I have this clip on my Instagram, is translated into English and captioning and see. I say that my French is like the Macron government. It used to work. It worked once, but it no longer works. And the idea is very simple and universal. Even if people who are not French speakers themselves, they understand what I was talking about. And the other one is even more specific to the French language. In the original routine, I joke about this miserable state of British railway industry. There are so many cancellations and strikes. And because I was going through it, I came up with a line. It's not really a chemin de fer, a chemin de rien faire. Now, chemin is like the road, the way. Fer is like iron. So like it's the iron road that is railway. But chemin de rien faire, rien faire, rien means nothing and faire means do. Rien faire means I do nothing. So I say, oh, it's not really a railway, it's an iron way. It's not the railroad, it's a road of doing nothing. And it's just a very stupid, simple rhyming joke. It's not particularly ha-ha funny, but it was very specific to the French language. And it did go down relatively well on that day, because I think the audience can appreciate that. Oh, obviously this guy, even though he didn't seem that fluent in this language, but he did his best to write something specific for us. And I think that they do appreciate the effort. My ultimate question after performing in that sort of French stand-up comedy night was, if a French speaker that cannot speak English or understand English well, even though my French was not perfect, but in London, when you don't have a big pool of performers, they may be happy to live with my sort of accented and sort of just like an intermediate level of French as a performer. But I wonder if a French speaker who is fluent in English, would that person prefer to hear the same joke in French or in English? And this is a question I don't know the answer of. Obviously, I will always deliver the joke in English better, but maybe there's a different flair when I say the joke in French, or maybe the French member audience would just be really tired after a long day. They cannot bear to hear more things in a foreign language. So even though it sounded a bit more labor, a bit more accented, they prefer to hear something in their language. I don't know. Or it could be that they are more protective of your language and their tolerance level for foreign accent is lower in their own mother tongue. They rather hear foreigners speaking accented English rather than accented French. I don't know. If you are a native French speaker and you happen to have seen me at those shows and you want to tell me what you think, please let me know. So far, I've performed at the French It All Comedy Show 3 times. Actually, Jeff asked me whether I could do it yesterday, again, when I was about to do the Italian show. And I said, I can't already commit to another one. It just really speaks that it's this much, much smaller pool of people. And if one or two people cancel at last minute, like he would ask and consider me. I think he was really kind. I thought, you know what? It was a bucket list. I'm happy to have done it once or twice in my life and never to do it again. And I was asked the first time yesterday. So maybe it were to a certain degree, but I also think that sort of just tells you how much smaller the pool is of performance you have and how much little room for maneuver as a promoter. Oh, I forgot to add this. So now I'm going to say something that's specific to someone who speaks multiple languages. That's a very niche enjoyment you can have when you think of the joke that's across languages. So I will start from an example that's not from me, it's from another comedian called Pete White. In the last monologue episode, I quoted his joke already, the mausoleum one. This is another joke of his that I really like. So the joke is, I'm sorry, just let you know, if you think the joke is fat shaming, I'm a fat person myself. So I think I'm slightly relieved of the punishment or the potential condemnation. So he said that Elton John did a marathon and was obviously out of breath because he's a little fatty gay. I don't know whether people can have that interlingual across language pun, you'll get it right away. A fatty gay, like a fat gay man, but also fatigué. Well, it's not exactly the same pronunciation. It's more like an anglicized French pronunciation, but most British people would have taken French as their first foreign language, and they don't speak much, but there are certain words they would know. Tired, fatigué, is one of it. Also because in the English language, they adopt the word fatigue, but there is a more advanced level word. But fatigué is something most British people would know. This is the kind of joke that I think most French and English people will both get it, so it's a great cross-cultural, cross-language pun that would work. I don't really like it. And I think like BBC Radio 4 listener, people who speak multiple languages would like this kind of creative output. The other example is my own joke, and I don't say it quite a lot because he has a very niche audience. So the joke goes like this. I have a Chinese friend who is also gay, but he lives in France and still refused to come out. And I say to him, you're like the chink in the armoire. Now, you need to understand both the English expression and the French word to get the pun I'm trying to get to. The English expression is chink in the armor. And it's also a little bit cringe because the word chink is like a racial slur for Chinese or East Asian people. But chink in the armor, the word itself is just like a little defect or like a damaged bit. So it wasn't meant as such. But this word typically avoided by people. And the other word, armoire, is basically a wardrobe, or how American would say a closet. When people come out, original phrases come out of the closet. So it gets on the idea he's a closeted gay, and he doesn't come out of the closet. And I need to use armoire because armoire sound like armor. It's a chink in armor, but he's a chink in armoire. So there is a pun with the word chink, but also there is a play of word between armor and armoire. This is such a niche joke. I think I've only done it 4 or 5 times. Very rarely do people get it. The only time people really seem to have enjoyed it was a gig in Hammersmith. And I look at the crowd, they were so obviously West London upper middle class. And I tried the joke. About a third of them laughed and they seemed to quite like it. That was the only time I ever got some positive feedback, because for the general British English speakers, a sort of French level, armoire is not something they would necessarily know. A croissant, a baguette, or feeling fatigué, maybe they do, but armoire isn't one of them. With that example, I think this is my conclusion today. Cross-cultural puns or moving between languages and doing comedy, maybe there's enjoyment in it, but I would say it's a bit more self-indulgent. Overall, I think if you're achieving or getting any benefits from doing comedy in different languages, especially when the other language isn't quite as fluent or at the same level as the other. So when you do language B, you have to rely really on translating your existing jokes in language A to language B. I think the advantage you'll get out of it is more linguistic, is more on the language learning part. Because when you force yourself into performing in a language you're not yet that fluent at, this corresponds to the last monologue episode I did. You can perform comedy even if when your fluency is not perfection yet. but it's going to take more work and you will make more progress. You will speak the language better. But in terms of stimulus to your creativity, I don't really think it helps that much. I'm thinking in terms of opportunity cost, especially in the era of social media, the requirement for content creators, it's really sad comedians are just content creators right now, but your creative output, the market sort of demand for it is constant. You always have to churn out more things, but you only have fixed amount of time and energy. So I'm thinking about the concept of opportunity cost, the time you have to move away from thinking, writing, performing in language A to language B. You probably could have spent also on language A to create more output. As in, the stuff you created under language B may not be able to be re-imported into language A. So you're more likely to end up with two warehouses of stock. Some of those items may be interchangeable, but I think the distinction or the firewall between the two warehouses will always be there. Maybe on a more abstract or bigger picture level, you would say that, well, if you acquire a different language that is to have another thinking pattern, you have a different worldview. So that makes you more complicated. You have more perspective. So that when you try to observe that the different language, you form a different viewpoint, is going to help you when you write. I do agree to that to an extent, but I think that's a bit remote. Also, I don't think that really overrides. If someone's really creative and they can think in an alternative way, they will be able to do that even though they're monolingual. So after having done, oh, I forgot to say, for the Italian one I did last night, because my level was so low, I was able to say two or three things in Italian, and then I say, sorry, I just can't do the whole thing, but I hope you appreciate. And Italian speakers generally are a lot nicer than French people. They're more accommodating. Just to say one or two sentences, they already appreciate the effort. So I was able to revert back to English. I put a little clip at how I got away by starting singing Ciao Bella to be endearing. It just proved that, yes, if you're like the intermediate level, that's possible, but if you're still like the beginner, just about to get to intermediate level, that may be a bit too early. So my conclusion, I think that it's feasible. You'll get something out of it. But what you get out of it are more likely to be on the language learning part. But as a creative, I think that you get more, I don't know, maybe I need to go back to starting McLeod again. You need to both language have to be a good fluency level in that you are able to think and write and create jokes in each language. Like the little spark I had when I came up with two jokes, but they were just two jokes out of a long set. So it's still not enough. So maybe if both languages you're absolutely fluent in and you can change easily, that maybe you'll find some stimulating, exciting help to your creative process. Otherwise, most of the advantage would be on the language learning side. A little final thought. Your brain, I don't know, we need some neuro... What is the English word for brain scientist? Is it neurologist? Neuroscientist? I don't know. I think of neurodivergent. It's something completely different. So I think our brains can be quite compartmentalized, and it's not like a very free space. The example being, when I was very, very young, I learned Japanese for 1 month and I decided to give up. And this was described in the recent episode with Spring Day. That was season 2, episode 29. Technically, Japanese was my first candidate for my second foreign language, but then I abandoned it and then I acquired French and I invested a lot more time in French. But I noticed that when I try to learn French, I always rely on English because English has so much borrowing from the French language to the Latin influence of that. French became an extension of my English language. And after French, I also learned a bit of German. I lived in Berlin for 1 year and I also realized that I'm using English. I learned German via English again. That's because English itself is a Germanic language. So French and German are both sort of like orbits of English. Whereas Japanese, because they have borrowed the Chinese writing, and I always use my most fluent language, Mandarin, to understand Japanese. So I feel like my brain has been bifurcated because I live in the UK for a very long time. But even though English is not my mother tongue, it's not a native language, it's a pretty competent language of mine, even though I do make mistakes. It's like bifurcated. There are two branches. One side is Mandarin, the other side is English. And then when I started learning Italian very, very late as a hobby, it has so much similarity to French, similar, so sister language. I was using French to understand Italian grammar. Italian became an extension of French again. If someone tried to ask me this word in French, how do you translate that in Japanese? If I do know the answer, it doesn't go straight from French to Japanese. It goes from French to my English brain, my English brain to my Mandarin brain, and Mandarin brain goes to my Japanese brain. I hope that makes sense to you, because the same question between Mandarin and English, I can answer very, very quickly. If someone asks me a word in French, how would I say it in Mandarin? Slightly more slowly, but I can still answer fairly quickly. But if you have one step further from French to Japanese, it goes through a lot of middle stop. I don't think it's a free, like one giant space. It's sort of compartmentalized with some narrow passages. And that's why that's similar to, I remember my friend who is half Finnish and half Greek. She used to work for the European Union. And European Union has so many official languages. So they are 3 main working languages, but technically every member state's national language is official language of the European Union. So they employ so many translators. Good luck for their job in the era of AI. But some languages combo are kind of rare. For example, if you want to translate both of her mother tongue, Greek and Finnish, it's very difficult to find a translator to translate directly from Finnish to Greek and vice versa. What they needed to do is to translate first from Finnish to English, and then another person then translate it from English to Greek, and also the other way around. And that's what I feel how it's like in my brain. Between the most common languages, the sort of translation was almost instant. I'm pretty used to it. It's almost automatic. But the less frequent combination, it does take time because you don't go through that all the time. That's all I have to say about today. It is possible to do this experiment because I live in London. It's such a big city and it has such a pool for different kind of immigrants. Also, it is a big city, but next to a continent of very different cultures. If you live in a big American city like Chicago, LA, or New York, please tell me if you can find a local comedy show that's conducted in a different language other than Spanish. I think Spanish is such a rising and important language in America these days. But is it possible to find a German comedy show, a French comedy show, or any other language in America? Please let me know. Maybe it's not just because London is big. It's just the migration pattern in Europe in general. I know a comedy club in Luxembourg run by a very competent, great promoter called Calidos. They have Spanish comedy show. They have Portuguese comedy show in Luxembourg. And if you remember in season 1, episode 30, I think, Denis Chujoya, the Russian comedian, he was able to do English and also Russian comedy show in cities where lots of Russian people moved to. He did Russian comedy show in Estonia for sure, but also he did it in Berlin, in Barcelona. It's all possible. Actually, there are not just French and Spanish comedy shows in London. There are also the Italian one I'm talking about. There are also, I think previously someone was organizing a Polish comedy show. There's also a Mandarin comedy show. And one of the performers, Yu Shen, I met at a French comedy show, also performs in Mandarin. There's a lot of things I hate about London, but I do love the multilingual and multicultural aspect of it. Okay, so that's all the thing I have to say about comedy languages and translation. Before I go, I'm just going to provide a little update on the statistics day. I don't know how many of you actually care. So when I look at the end of June, so that's Q2, I'm sounding like very corporate. So at the end of Q2, if I look back 180 days, now the top city is London, second is Taipei, my home city, third is Madrid, fourth is Belgrade. I still don't know who listened to this podcast in Serbia. Would you get in touch at all? Number 5 is Glasgow, 6 is Los Angeles, 7 is Dublin, 8 is Berlin, 9 is Paris, and 10 is New York. In terms of percentage, UK represent 28%. It's even less than a third right now. USA 17%, followed by France 6%, Taiwan 5.6%, and Spain 4.5%. But if I only look at Q2 on its own, Paris is out of the picture. Because I think I published Tati's episode in January. There's a lot of people in France listen to the podcast, and many of them probably decided it's not for them. But Hyderabad from India became number 9. And I have Charlotte from, I think it's North Carolina or South Carolina at number 8. There's another city called Fremont. It's in California. I thought, oh, I have more listeners in the States. And I look up on the map, and it's one of those evil Silicon Valley cities. So it's probably just the data center sending crawlers who use my podcast to train their AI. I don't know whether AI got my Chinese accent, so good luck to them. If I look at the last 90 days only, then UK represent 26.42% and USA got to 24.34%. So that's a lot more people in the US listen to the podcast. I'm pretty happy with that. Please come back. And Taiwan represents 7%. So it's just a general update of the statistic. Now, I'd like to thank you for your patience, and because once again, I feel like I have enough of myself. I will have a short summer break, which I will release another sort of trailer to explain why the summer break is needed, because I'm going to the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, and I hope to see you very soon in the autumn. And please don't leave. Please don't unsubscribe, because once you unsubscribe, the Apple Podcast will stop redownloading and really affects the number. There are more than 60 episodes. Go back, revisit some of the old ones. I really think some of the podcast episodes are really good. Some, not so, but try my best through editing to turn something less amazing into something amazing. And that's all I can say. Now I have to take a train to perform in Leeds tonight. I'm very excited, but I also can't be late. So I'm going to say goodbye to all of you now. I wish you a very lovely day and a very lovely summer. And I will see you again very soon. Bye.
Che bello, che bel pubblico. Non posso fare lo spettacolo con Tim.
Perché?
No, è troppo difficile. Ma mi chiama. Ah! Una mattina mi sono svegliato. Bella ciao. Una mattina mi sono svegliato. Ho trovato l'invaso.